This is the Graceful Atheist Podcast. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Graceful Atheist Podcast. My name is David, and I am trying to be the Graceful Atheist. As always, please rate and review the podcast on podchaser.com or the Apple Podcast Store, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you are listening. We turned on the Deconversion Anonymous Facebook group last week, and I have been absolutely astonished by the response. People are connecting, telling their stories to one another, and supporting one another in a very natural and organic way. I am so excited. I am so very grateful for Arlene taking on this task. If you are interested in joining the group, it's at facebook.com/groups/deconversion. I'll have links in the show notes. One request that I have is that we have a couple of questions when you request access to the group. Please fill those out. It feels really awkward if those are unanswered. I am overjoyed, though, by the response so far. It seems so clear that we need to be able to connect with one another, and so I'm excited to have a place for us to do that. You may have noticed the change in artwork. I want to thank Logan Thomas, Beyond Belief, for doing the new artwork for the podcast. I am incredibly grateful, Logan. Thank you so much for that work. I think it looks beautiful. We also have that in the Deconversion Anonymous Facebook group. Again, I want to thank the person who did the original artwork for the podcast. That person wishes to remain anonymous, but I want to thank them again for their work as well. But what Logan brought to the table is a whole suite of artwork so that I have options of where and when I can use it. So thank you, Logan. I really appreciate what you've done. Thank you. Special thanks to Mike T for editing today's episode. On to today's show. My guest today is Emily. Emily grew up in the Evangelical Free Church. She had a relatively good experience as a young person. She was a pastor's kid and also an introvert. And although she enjoyed her time at youth group, it was also difficult to handle the expectations of being a pastor's kid. Missions were also a big deal in her family, and Emily went on several missions trips herself at very early ages. Purity culture was a huge impact on her, and it's taken her much work to get over a lot of that. In her college years, she began to doubt. She was at a Christian college. Ultimately, she confessed to a beloved professor before she left college, and fortunately, he responded with grace and kindness. Emily went on to travel abroad, which expanded her perspective in the world. Back in the States, eventually the Trump phenomenon took place, and this, in her words, turned her indifference into a feeling of disgust. Emily has a great story to tell, so here she is to tell her story. Emily, welcome to the Graceful Atheist Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You were kind enough to respond to my desperate plea for interviews, and I'm excited to hear your story. The email that you sent me seems like a really good outline of your story, but I want you to tell it. So we'll just jump right in with, what was your religious tradition growing up?
So I grew up in an evangelical free church in a small town in the Midwest. It was very much the type of family where we went to church every Sunday without question, usually more than once a week. My parents were involved in the music team and other various activities throughout the week. So by the time I was in, you know, preschool, kindergarten age, I had started out on the Cubbies, Sparks, Awana track. Cubbies is the little kid's version of Awanas.
Okay.
So yes, church multiple times a week. When I was about 4 years old, maybe even a little younger, I accepted Jesus into my heart, as they say.
Yes.
We were actually in a McDonald's parking lot, my mom and I, and I just piped up and said, you know, I want to pray and ask Jesus into my heart. So my mom, of course, was thrilled.
Yes.
And so that happened at a very young age. I also attended Christian schools all the way from preschool through my undergrad. So they were all fairly small schools until I got to college, where I was at a more mid-sized liberal arts Christian college.
Yeah.
And I went to Christian camps every summer. I was just involved in everything.
I'll just interject here and just say, you also mentioned that it was mostly positive. So like, I do like to acknowledge that there are good parts of it, right? So what were the good parts?
I will say, when I was growing up, I mean, this was my whole world. I didn't really have much exposure to people who weren't Christians between my school and my church involvement. It was overall positive when I was younger. I enjoyed the church activities. For example, Awana, I was really good at memorizing Bible verses, and I had fun with the games, all of that. So I do have to acknowledge it was not, especially in the early days, it was not a very negative experience. It was when I got a bit older that I started to run into some problems.
There is a rest of the story, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one other thing I wanted to mention, my mom was very much into missions, still is. She loves going on short-term missions trips. And so I got involved in that too, even at a very young age. When I was in middle school, my youth group went on some trips. Yes, we went to the Bahamas and did some VBS with the kids there.
Okay.
And VBS being Vacation Bible School, but most listeners probably know that. And my youth group also did a Mexico missions trip. It was a mix of working with kids and also some construction projects, which is kind of funny to think about middle schoolers going to build things in another country, but we did.
Yes.
And then I also did go with my mom on a missions trip to Honduras. And this was all before I even started high school. So very young.
Yeah.
And even personally, I was very invested in that. For example, a couple of my friends from school in, I think it was elementary, maybe middle school, we even started a little club to kind of raise money for missionaries that we knew from our churches and such. So I was very invested in that early on. Yeah. And then another important part of my story from those early days was that my dad actually became a pastor when I was probably 10 or 11. He had been a lawyer before and decided to change careers and go into ministry. And he actually focused on doing interim pastor work. So he was at churches that were kind of between long-term pastors. So it would be anywhere from a few months to sometimes a couple of years as they were in these transition periods. So he moved around quite a bit. Yeah. But we still lived in the same town. I was still involved in the same youth group all the way through middle school and high school at our home church.
To be clear then, you were not necessarily attending the churches he was pastoring at.
Well, that is an interesting part of my story.
Okay.
Most of them were close enough that I could attend with him and, in fact, was expected to on Sundays.
Yeah.
But then during the week, I would be back at the church I grew up in.
I see.
For youth group.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. So I guess where I'm leading to this is, did you feel the same pressure that many pastors' kids do of kind of a level of inhuman perfection was required?
Yeah, it got a bit tricky when I got into high school, especially. There were a couple of years where he was at a church that was about 2 hours away from our home, and I was still expected to come with him. My mom and I would both get up really early with him on Sunday mornings, drive up to this church, and it was a difficult time for me because I'm an introvert, and so I was a shy teenager, and just being brought up to this church where I didn't know anyone except my parents was really challenging. I feel like the pressure that I felt was more of a pressure to, I guess, engage and be more outgoing than I naturally was. I wanted to just bring my book and hide in my dad's office until the service started and read. Yeah, but he was encouraging me to go to Sunday school with the high school kids and play in the music team with him and all these things that I didn't really want to do. And I do want to be clear, I don't want to just disparage my parents in any way. They raised me the best they could, but in many ways I was very well taken care of. I had a loving family, but I want to be honest about how, you know, the elements of religion impacted me. So yeah, that was a difficult period when we were going to that church, and it definitely I kind of just would withdraw. And I remember one incident where, which is a good example of kind of being pushed to do more than I wanted to. The church was putting on a Valentine's Day dinner. I think it was kind of to honor the families in the church, the couples. I don't think it was a fundraiser per se, but it was a special Valentine's Day dinner. And the high school youth group kids were volunteering to serve the dinner at the church. And so my dad really wanted me to be involved in that. And I wanted no part of it. Had a very emotional reaction, but was basically told, no, you are going to do this. So yes, my experience of being a pastor's kid was kind of different than some. It's not like it was my whole life growing up. And it was just this odd thing where we were at different churches where I didn't really know these people. And it was very challenging for an introvert like myself.
Yeah. As an introvert, I can't stand like the moment where it's like, okay, turn to your neighbor and say hello. I can't imagine being the pastor's child and being thrust out into the public like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely a tough stretch.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I feel for you. Trust me.
Thanks. That also leads me into my youth group experience, which is related because as an introvert, the youth group experience, especially in the types of evangelical church I was raised in, it was not suited to my personality at all.
Okay.
The music was so loud. And I loved, you know, I'm a musician. I studied music in college. So I was involved in the music team at church, but it was just painfully loud, honestly.
Yeah.
I still have ringing in my ears I have like chronic tinnitus I can't say for sure it's because of the youth group music, but between the youth group and also my chapels at school, which had crazy loud music, I'm pretty sure there was some damage there.
I have to tell you, that is the first time I have heard that. That's interesting.
Yeah. Again, it's not like it's not the kind of thing you can diagnose specifically to one, one incident, but there was a lot of music exposure that was way too loud. Yeah. So anyway, but getting back to the youth group experience overall, it was again, the kind of environment where I felt pressured to present myself and to do things that just didn't suit my personality. So I felt pressured to be a part of what they called a ministry team, which was focused on kind of twofold, on evangelism and outreach to new kids, and also to kind of nurturing the people that were already in the youth group and developing community and such. But honestly, all of that was overwhelming to me.
Right.
I also didn't go to school with most of the kids that were in my youth group because I went to a small Christian school in another town. So that just added to the level of social anxiety that I experienced.
Yes. Yeah.
So honestly, by the time that I was an upperclassman in high school, I kind of stopped going to youth group in my junior year. It's kind of a funny story. During my junior year, I was taking so many classes at school that my school allowed me to homeschool Bible that year so that I could fit enough other classes into my schedule. But I fell behind on the homeschool Bible curriculum because I was so involved with other things at school. And my dad found out that I was behind and he said, well, you can't go to youth group until you finish your Bible curriculum. Uh-huh. And so I missed youth group for a few months as I was catching up. And I discovered I really like staying home from youth group. It's just way more relaxing to stay home and do my homework. And I was a really big baseball fan at the time. I just liked being able to watch the games with my dad. I'm like, yeah. So I didn't really go much back after that very much.
Interesting. The punishment had the opposite effect of its intention.
Exactly. Yeah. It's kind of ironic. I don't know if he realizes that that was kind of the catalyst, but yeah, that's when I stopped going to youth groups.
Okay. And then being out of the context of youth group, kind of that constant reinforcement, was that when you began to have some doubts at all? Or?
Well, I will say I wouldn't have considered myself to be having any doubts at that point.
Okay.
It was more in college. But I do want to acknowledge before I move on to my college experience, I do want to acknowledge some of the things that really did impact me negatively beyond just the being an introvert and feeling the social anxiety. I also had a lot of really strong fear of hell and the rapture, starting from a young age. So there was a stretch of several years when I was in elementary school when a lot of big events happened. There was the Columbine shootings. There was the whole Y2K scare, which with all the Left Behind and Rapture talk being in the culture at that time, of course, Y2K was scary. Then I was in fifth grade when 9/11 happened. And at the same time, there were a couple of things in our personal lives. My siblings, several of them were in college at the time, and someone they knew at their small school committed suicide. And so I was thinking about death a lot during this period in elementary school.
Wow.
And yeah, I definitely went through a pretty kind of a dark phase where I was very afraid of death. I was thinking about the topic of suicide because of this incident at my sibling's college. And with all this fear of hell, it just all compounded. And I probably was depressed. I never went to therapy at that point in my life. But I would say the salvation prayer, as they call it, over and over, like multiple times a day, because I was just terrified of hell. So that was definitely a very something that I remember has impacted me very negatively in those early years of being in the church.
Yeah, wow. You know, I think the hell anxiety, rapture anxiety, which are hashtags, I'm sure you know, but for the listener's sake, is so serious because you're telling a child, you know, when you were 4 years old, I don't know what exactly you were told, but you know, you're basically saying, if you're not good, God may punish you and in this severe way. And then as you get to your teenage years where you can actually abstractly think about what the implications of that are, that comes home and would be absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, it was. And I took it all so seriously. I mean, like I said, at this point, I wasn't really doubting any of the things I had been taught.
Right.
And so I believed it all. It was very real to me. So yes, it was a very scary time.
I'm very sorry.
Yeah. Thank you. On a related note, I also struggled with just a severe sense of guilt all the time over minor infractions. I mean, I was a very well-behaved child. I've always been a people pleaser and a rule follower. And so it's not even, I wasn't even ever severely punished for anything as a kid because I didn't, you know, mess up in a huge way. But I still felt all this extreme guilt over just super minor incidents or even just mistakes. And part of that, I mean, I am a perfectionist still, and that's just part of my personality, but it's also definitely related to the messages about sin and hell and all of that.
You may have heard me talk about that kind of that feedback loop, a vicious feedback loop. People who are really self-honest, you recognize, you know, that you're human, you're fallible, and then you have some standard that is nearly impossible or truly impossible to live up to. And that feedback loop of, well, I'm not living up to that. I must be bad. And it's just absolutely terrible, damaging. So I think there's a certain personality type where that's just a trap that's really easy to fall into.
Yeah. It definitely affected me a lot. It's the only other topic I really want to touch on before we get on to my college days and kind of the start of my deconstruction,
sure,
is the topic of purity culture, which I'm sure is relevant for many of your listeners. So I was very much raised in kind of the heyday of purity culture. I had no sex education in school or really from my parents. It was just messages of, you know, don't do anything.
Right.
I actually, one of my high school teachers, we had to take one health class, but it wasn't a true sex education class in any sense of the word. One of my health teachers actually told us girls that you shouldn't sit on a guy's lap because you might get pregnant.
I'm covering my eyes.
Yeah. Wow. You can cut that if it's inappropriate for your listeners.
No,
but yes, that was about the extent of my knowledge.
Oh man. Okay.
Yeah. So it was very between that, you know, what being taught, all those things from purity culture, and just being kind of a shy person, I really did not learn how to even interact with anyone in a romantic setting until I was much older, even past college. I just felt so behind just in the development of that side of my life. And so I'll get into that a little more later, but that was that was kind of another big element of how I was raised.
I mean, I think purity has been a part of Christianity for time immemorial, but it does feel like that 90s kids, early 2000s kids, you guys got the brunt of this. And in a devastating way. So I can imagine that was incredibly difficult.
Yeah. It's taken a lot of work to overcome that. So I went to college for my undergrad at a fairly well-known Christian liberal arts school, and it was, like many liberal arts schools, it had strict rules for its students. No drinking, even off campus. No dancing. Although by the time I was there, they were allowing some school sponsored dances, but there could be no reckless dancing in the dorms.
Yeah, you know, yes. That's
bad. and of course, you had to sign a covenant agreeing to all these lifestyle commitments, and of course, no sex outside of a heterosexual marriage.
Right.
So that's the kind of strict environment I was in. I will say I really enjoyed the academics at this school. It had very strong academics. I had some wonderful professors, a few of whom I'm still friends with. And I did make a few close friends there. But overall, it was very lonely for me during that time. As with many small Christian schools, there's a very strong subculture of it's kind of hard to describe, but there is a very strong emphasis on Christian community to the point where it feels kind of alienating to people who don't fit into this very specific evangelical subculture.
Right.
So even just all the emphasis on dorm life and activities and getting involved in Bible studies and small groups and things, all of that felt very stifling to me because I just didn't feel like I fit in very well. And it got to the point where by my senior year, I would say to myself, if I hear the word community one more time, I'm going to scream. Yeah. So it was difficult for me socially, even though I enjoyed the academics.
Right.
And I never really found a church to attend regularly while I was in college. I visited quite a few churches because I felt like that's what I was supposed to do. And there was one that was just right off of campus that I actually enjoyed pretty well and that I went to, but I never connected with anyone there. I never found a church home, as they put it. And so by the end of college, I basically had stopped going to church. I really enjoyed just going to the cafeteria early before all the people got back and getting to eat my brunch in peace and quiet. So yeah, that was me by the time I was senior year. And also even thinking back, we had mandatory chapel 3 times a week there. And by the end, I was mostly just sitting down doing my homework during chapel and skipping the singing. And so I was pretty, I was starting to backslide, as they would say. But at the same time, I still thought, I honestly believed in the Christian teachings that I had been raised with. It wasn't really till my senior year where I started to admit that I was having some doubts. I was actually in a theology class that we all had to take as seniors. It was one of the gen ed requirements. And I had a really, really wonderful professor. He was very intellectual. I really enjoyed his teaching, but he was also just very kind. And he mentioned at one point in class, I don't even remember what the context was, but he mentioned that he had a lot of conversations with students over the years who were having doubts about their faith. Mm-hmm. And so I took that as kind of an invitation, like, okay, he's open to this. So I signed up for his office hours. This was literally the week before I graduated. I was like, I need to tell somebody before I leave how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
And so I went to his office hours. He was so kind. And I just think back on that meeting with a lot of gratitude these days because he listened. I told him that I had never really felt at home in Christian circles. Mm-hmm. At that point, I said, I still believe or I want to believe in God, but I just don't feel like there's a place for me in the church, basically. And I got very emotional and he was just very understanding. And he just encouraged me. He didn't talk about doctrine or try to convince me intellectually. He gave me some encouraging ways that I could try to make my faith more meaningful in my personal life as I graduated and moved on to this next chapter. I was going to grad school next. And it was a very just nurturing conversation, even though I wasn't at that point. I was still very in much in the early phases of leaving.
Right.
I'll always be grateful for him. So that was kind of a moment that when I look back on my journey, that's like a distinct moment.
It's really interesting. You like several touch points there that are very similar to my story in that, you know, small Christian college, I loved the academics. I loved the professors. There was a feeling of being coddled like we were children while we were supposed to be growing up as adults. Mm-hmm. And then also just connecting with, I had a beloved professor whom I love dearly. Like, you know, like it. And same thing. You have that, you know, a graceful, you know, giving, kind relationship. And that's deeply meaningful.
Yeah. Yeah. I know he probably won't listen to this, but, or know who I am, sure. But I am very grateful for him. So yeah. So then I graduated from my undergrad and I actually moved to London for a year. I did a grad school program there. At the time, I was thinking about going into history because I had double majored in history and music as an undergrad. So I had been accepted to a master's program in history. And okay. I've always loved London. I had been there a few times before and wanted to spend more time there. So I spent a year there for this grad school program. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful time in my life. I had so much fun. I love that city. And I was also very interested in the arts because my music background, I also love theater. So while I was there, even though I was studying history, I did a bunch of different internships and volunteer work for different arts organizations. And I went to as many shows as I could and just soaked it all in because it's a wonderful city for the arts. While I was there, I did visit a few churches. In fact, I was pretty interested in the Anglican Church over there, just the Church of England. Because it was so different from the evangelical churches I had been raised in, which really emphasized the emotional experience. If they felt more shallow to me, the kind of churches I was raised in. And I really loved the rituals of the Anglican Church and just the beauty of that and kind of feeling a more sense of being historically rooted. And all of that appealed to me. So I did visit several churches while I was there.
Did you go to any cathedrals like St. Paul's or?
Oh, a lot.
Yeah.
St. Paul's is probably my favorite building in London. Amazing. It's so gorgeous. Yeah. I've even climbed to the top of the dome, which is amazing. Yeah.
That's cool. Okay.
You get great views of the city. Yeah. And Westminster is also gorgeous.
Yes.
And I've been to quite a few others around the UK. So I love, like I said, I love the historical element of that. And honestly, those elements of Christianity still do kind of appeal to me.
Sure.
I love the beauty and the history. And I visited at least one Catholic church in my early 20s for that same reason, because I was attracted to the ritual and the history and just the beauty of their services. So yes, I really enjoyed visiting those sites in England.
And I can imagine, as you're studying history, that also would be just amazing to be in some of these buildings that are, you know,
yes,
hundreds and hundreds of years old. It's a little different in the States. You know, yep, like we just don't have things that are more than a couple hundred years mm-hmm. old. And so you can be in a building from the 1300s in Europe, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's really amazing. Yeah. I know, here we think something from the 1800s is old.
Exactly. And
no, this cathedral was built in the 1200s. Yeah. Yeah. So that was just a wonderful time. I've many fond memories of London, and I go back whenever I can. But yeah, but that year really did cement first of all, it helped me clarify my career path, because I just loved my involvement with the arts so much mm-hmm. while I was there. So I ended up going into arts administration, which is the field I still work in. And I moved back to a larger city nearer to my hometown after that year was done. So back to the U.S. Mm-hmm. And in my early 20s, I will say it kind of felt like my faith was just kind of on hold. I didn't really have any interest in going to church. I lived with one of my sisters for a few years, so I would go with her when she wanted me to, because she went pretty regularly. But I didn't have much interest in myself going. I didn't pray. I didn't read the Bible, any of that. But I wasn't quite ready to totally engage intellectually with how I really believe now. Uh-huh. And what to do with all these things that I was taught, because there was still the fear of hell and I just didn't really know what to do with it all. And I was also just trying to build my career and I was kind of focused on other things.
I think most people are in that category, right? Like, you know, they grew up, they had a faith, you know, they're busy building a career or starting families or doing their thing, becoming an adult, and they just don't think about it at all. I really think that that's the vast majority of people. So it actually takes a certain personality to say, hey, I actually want to, what do I believe? I need to analyze that and think about it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, because it really, who knows, I might still have been in that phase for even longer if it hadn't been for the 2016 election. So
yeah,
if it's okay to talk politics a little bit.
Yeah, that's okay.
A little bit about my background in terms of how politics and religion intersected mm-hmm. growing up. So I was very much raised, I mean, this is not an unusual story, but very much raised with the sense that being a Christian and being a Republican go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And I honestly, when I was in elementary school, we did a civics class. I don't remember exactly what grade we were in, but in this civics class, they told us about the two major political parties and kind of laid out their platforms and the major issues that they care about. And honestly, back then, I heard about the Democrats, you know, wanting to care for the poor and things like that. And I thought, oh, they sound like the better party, but Christians are supposed to be Republicans. I remember being confused about that.
Yeah.
But I didn't really know what to do with that. And, you know, we were Republicans. That's just how it was. And so honestly, one of my earliest political memories was around the time, well, was when Bill Clinton's sex scandal happened.
Yeah.
I remember there was a barn on one of the highways outside of our town that had a sign on its roof that said, "Impeach the pervert." I remember that. Okay. And so early on, I got the sense that personal morality in political leaders really matters for Christians.
That's what I thought.
And for Republicans. Yep. So this is why I was just dumbfounded when Christians, especially white evangelicals, went all in for Trump. And at that point, and it was even people I know and love and respect, and I was seeing this happen, and it just made no sense to me. And it really turned my indifference that I had had towards Christianity into kind of a feeling of disgust. Like, I want nothing to do with this. I just pushed it away. I distanced myself from it. I was so disillusioned and, yeah, just repelled by it. But it's only been in the last couple of years that I've really moved beyond that phase and started to engage with what I actually believe now. And I discovered kind of the ex-evangelical or deconstruction communities that are out there, discovered all the various podcasts and books and other resources that are out there, and also just started to do some more reading about the history of the Christian right to kind of explore the political environment that I was raised in. And it was kind of a slow process. I want to mention, going back to the purity culture aspect of my background, one really formative book that I read early on in this period where I was really starting to deconstruct was by Nadia Boltz-Weber. It's called Shameless, and she is a progressive Christian. But this book was about a very sex-positive view of a sex-positive angle on Christianity that I had never even – I never even knew there were Christians who thought this way.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I remember that book was a very I view it as a stepping stone for me because it was still written from a Christian perspective, but it made me realize, well, if Christians can have such radically different views about these issues than the very rigid views that I was raised with, then, you know, it kind of just opened me up to being able to explore more and examine my own beliefs. So, like I said, that kind of was a stepping stone book for me. And then I just started reading everything I could get my hands on and listening to podcasts and such. And so I've gotten to the point where right now I consider myself agnostic and I guess you could say functionally atheist, as some people put it.
Sure.
I'm open to the possibility of there being a higher power of some sort, but I don't believe that it is the God of the Bible and that the Bible is, you know, in the inerrant word of God.
Right.
And it is still kind of weird to say that out loud, but
Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. But that's where I am right now. And I've also, I've been working with a therapist on various issues, especially really in regards to my relationships, because I'm still unpacking all the pretty culture baggage. About 3 years ago, I got into a relationship that was my first long-term relationship ever because, like I told you, I felt like I was so developmentally delayed in that aspect of my life that it was, it was my late 20s by the time I was even in a successful relationship.
Okay.
So, yes, I'm working with a therapist on a lot of that as well as other issues. But I will say, overall, now that I'm kind of on the other side, definitely still working through some things, but it is, as many people have expressed, it feels very freeing to let go of those rigid, that rigid framework and the fear of hell and sin and all of it. It feels good. It feels freeing.
Yes.
And like I said, I'm a musician and, love theater and many other art forms as well. And I find a lot of meaning in those parts of my life. I'm also a huge reader. So I love being able to explore all the creativity that humans make and have made without feeling any need to tie it to my faith or to give God credit, you know, for something that humans did. That's where I find a lot of meaning in my life.
That's awesome. And it's also the freedom to explore the human wisdom over the ages and do so critically. Like, I'll take this piece, this works, and I don't like this piece, and I'll take that, you know, like, you don't have to take it whole cloth and defend it, you know, you can just learn, like, what do you find interesting?
Right. I feel this immense intellectual curiosity. I mean, I've always been intellectually curious, but yeah, just having the freedom to explore, read all sorts of different things, enjoy all sorts of different art forms. It's great.
Yes, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, I did just want to explore just a little more depth, if you're willing. You mentioned the concept of Christian nationalism. And my question to you is, when you came back from London, but before the Trump phenomena, were you aware of that difference? Like, from the difference between the way the UK or Europe has the mixture of religion and politics versus the United States?
I will say that my eyes were opened to a lot of different things when I lived in the UK.
Yeah.
And honestly, I realized how the rest of the world looks at American politics, and just got a broader sense, for example, of the very negative reactions to George W. Bush and the two wars.
Yeah.
And it was a little jarring for me. I didn't really know what to do with it while I was over there, because you already feel a little bit outnumbered when you're the only American in your class, for example. I just kind of stayed quiet and listened. But it was definitely an eye-opening time in that respect. And also just being around so many different people from different backgrounds and different countries, that year really widened my horizons in so many ways. I don't think I was quite aware yet of the very distinct Christian nationalism angle so much, but it definitely changed my political views, even just living abroad for a year.
Yeah.
Even when I came back, and it was just a couple years before the 2016 election, that period, I was definitely starting, my political views were starting to change.
Right.
2016 was the big catalyst.
Yes, definitely. I think what is interesting is, like you described, the sex positive Christian book, recognizing the diversity of opinions within Christianity. I think analogously, when you step out of the United States as an American and see the skepticism, and I'd take it beyond just George Bush, even, you know, the Obama years, I was hearing lots of skepticism from my European and UK friends, you know, the CIA, the NSA, what they're up to, you know, is not looked good upon overseas. The reason I bring that up is it just allows you to step back for a second and observe your own culture, whether that's your own faith, whether that's, you know, being an American, what have you, and see it through someone else's eyes. And that has an amazing impact on you personally, that you're suddenly able to see that there are one or two flaws and that maybe we need to look at these things in more detail.
Yeah, for sure. It's just, traveling abroad is so eye-opening, and so many Americans don't get a chance to do it, or just because our country's so big, they tend to just vacation domestically. And you really get a different perspective, like you said, when you travel. And it was a very valuable experience for me.
And I will definitely acknowledge how obnoxious this sounds. Like, you know, it's a place of privilege to have had the opportunities to be overseas.
Absolutely.
But having gained that insight, you know, trying to share that a little bit as well.
Yeah. I'm very grateful for, all the opportunities I had to study and to travel. I definitely was very lucky.
So what I'd like to hear from you is maybe some recommendations for resources, that maybe your favorite books, some podcasts other than this one, YouTube, what have you. What are the things that you would recommend for people who are at the beginning of, hey, what is this all about? What's what I'm beginning to question?
Yeah. Well, since we were just talking about the political aspect, I will say one of the historians that I first started to read was Randall Balmer, who is a historian of religion, American religion, and its ties to politics. And he has some great work on the history of the Christian right. And while we're also on the political element, I will say the podcast Straight White American Jesus has been really helpful for me to understand the political environment that I was raised in. One of the podcasts that's been good for me to help me laugh through all the things that I was raised with is called Deconversion Therapy.
Yes. Karen and Bonnie are awesome.
They're so much fun, and they're a much lighter take. They do get into serious topics, but they just help all of us who were raised in that environment to just kind of laugh at the funny stories. And that can be very, very healing in its own way.
I'll throw a recommendation out there. Mega, the podcast, is a fictional like youth pastor and leader, youth leader. And they, basically speak evangelical to each other, but it's a satirical take. But they have lots of Christian listeners who maybe don't entirely know that they're in on the joke. So if you like Deconversion Therapy, I think you'd like Mega the podcast. So
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
I did think of a couple more books. These one again on the more political history side of things, but Jesus on John Wayne, which has been talked about a lot in the past year by Christian Cobus-Jume, is excellent. Also, White Too Long by Robert Jones is just an excellent self-examination, but also historical look at white evangelicalism and its history with racism. And it's and he is still a Christian, but has done this incredible work, both historical work and personal work. So those are two that stick out as well.
Well, thank you for those recommendations. Emily, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I think you have a wonderful story and you told it so well. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Final thoughts on the episode. After we turned off the record button, I mentioned to Emily how much her story of Christian university resonated with me. The experience of both having a really interesting time with interesting professors who teach with passion and rigor, and then at the same time feeling infantilized by the environment of being treated like a child, right at the time when you are supposed to be becoming an adult. Although not surprising, I am continuing to be shocked by the impact of purity culture on millennials. That one has to recover from the purity culture you grow up in is devastating and entirely unnecessary. It is a tragedy, and I hope that, like Emily, those of you who have experienced that can find help in therapy and other healthy outlets. I think Emily expressed something that we have all felt, and I definitely experienced this myself. Coming from the 90s, where Bill Clinton was villainized not for his abuse of power in the situation, but rather for the sexual act itself, the politics of that day made him out to be a pervert, as Emily talked about. Then to come just a couple of decades later and have Trump hit the scene, and those very same conservative Christians embraced Trump and ignored his moral failings, I too was incredibly shocked. And I think now we are living through the consequences of that. If you are a believer and you are listening, the entire ex-evangelical movement is a direct result of just what Emily expressed, the disgust that she ultimately felt as she watched white evangelicals embrace Trump and ignore all of his moral failings, all of his racism, his xenophobia, his sexism. It turns out that my deconversion happened about a year prior to Trump coming on the scene as a real candidate. And I watched this take place. I watched as believers tried to grapple with what was happening, as I myself tried to grapple with the people who I loved and cared for who seemed to be embracing Trump as well. With a few years of perspective after deconversion, it is clear to me that religion is always about identity and culture and being in the in-group. Maybe it shouldn't have shocked us that this happened. I do think that there will be many, many people like Emily who may have deconverted anyway if Trump hadn't happened, but whose deconversion deconstruction was hurried along by that moment in time in history. I want to thank Emily for being on the podcast, for sharing her story, for really letting us see her thought process as she went from a Christian who was doing all the right things to suffering through purity culture, getting into college, starting to have doubts, and then ultimately walking away entirely after the politics of the day pushed her away. Thank you, Emily, for sharing your story. Today, I'm going to do something slightly different because I am also a consumer of podcasts. A quick shout out to a podcast that I absolutely love is called Decoding the Gurus. And what's significant about this podcast is that it is taking a critical look at what is often seen as the scientific, rationalist, secular perspective. Not to say that they are theists in any way, but rather to be willing to criticize or at least look critically at the stars that come up within the secular community. And a recent episode, the September 24th episode, had Stuart Ritchie on to talk about science in general, how it applies to COVID-19 and various other things. But something that Stuart Ritchie said that really struck me that I wanted to share was about why the atheist community or the skeptics community of the 2000s and 2010s or so really kind of fell apart. And his point was that being just against something does not bring people together. You can be against something for many different reasons, but to be for something, you generally have to have a shared vision. You have to have an agreed upon sense of what the goal is, what you are all trying to work towards. My Secular Grace Thought of the Week is inspired by what I've just been witnessing within our Facebook community, and that is that we are for something. We are for secular grace. We believe in secular grace. We believe in people. We believe in each other. I know that I sometimes slip into the easy criticism of Christianity, and I often call this shooting fish in a barrel. It's too easy. It would be simple for me to just spend all of my time criticizing the failures of Christianity. I'm really not interested in that at all. I'm really interested in, given that we have discovered Christianity is not true, now what? We're still human beings. We still need each other. We still need awe, belonging, and connection. And how do we accomplish that? My encouragement for you this week is to be for something. Emily talked about having that moment of, what do I believe? And going through that discovery process. And I think that is really valuable. Don't be one of the people that we described who never asks that question, who just walks away from Christianity or remains in Christianity in either case and never thinks about it, never thinks about what is it that I believe and why. Take that time, do that discovery. It is an end unto itself. It is worth that process. Again, I just want to say how incredibly thankful I am for what is happening in the Facebook group, Deconversion Anonymous. It is more than I could have hoped for, and I am hoping that you will join us as well. Be intentional in that group, care for one another, show grace, and this will be the opportunity for us to learn and grow together. Another quick thank you to Logan Thomas, Beyond Belief, for the podcast artwork. I think it looks amazing. I hope you like it too. More than that, what I'm really excited about is the participation that I'm beginning to see with the podcast. Mike T, as always, doing the editing. Arlene is now starting up the Facebook group as a community builder, and Logan Thomas has done the artwork for us. So again, if you can think of a way that you would like to participate with the community and the podcast, please let me know, gracefulatheist@gmail.com. Until next time, my name is David, and I am trying to be the graceful atheist. Join me and be graceful human beings. Time for the footnotes. The beat is called Waves from Makai Beats. Links will be in the show notes. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can promote it on your social media. You can subscribe to it in your favorite podcast application, and you can rate and review it on podchaser.com. You can also support the podcast by clicking on the affiliate links for books on gracefulatheist.com. If you have podcast production experience and you would like to participate with the podcast, please get in touch with me. Have you gone through a faith transition and do you need to tell your story? Reach out. If you are a creator or work in the deconstruction, deconversion, or secular humanism spaces and would like to be on the podcast, just ask. If you'd like to financially support the podcast, there's links in the show notes. To find me, you can Google Graceful Atheist. You can Google deconversion. You can Google secular grace. You can send me an email, gracefulatheist@gmail.com. Or you can check out the website, gracefulatheist.com. My name is David, and I am trying to be the graceful atheist. Join me and be graceful human beings. This has been the Graceful Atheist Podcast.